Hello and welcome. You're listening to Times of India's TOI Sportscast podcast. My name is Akash Dasgupta. I'm the sports editor of Times of India Online. And on today's episode, I want to take all of you back in time a little bit to the recent cricketing carnival, the cricketing extravaganza that just culminated and wrapped up in Australia. I'm, of course, talking about the ICC Men's T20 World Cup that saw England win their second title, becoming just the second team after the West Indies to win two titles at the T20 World Cup level. And I want to dedicate this episode to the thousands of men and women who work tirelessly behind the scenes to ensure that a tournament of the size of a T20 World Cup can be held absolutely seamlessly. And that's what Australia delivered this time. That's what a state like Victoria and Melbourne and the MCG delivered this time, which is why it gives me great pleasure to welcome my guest for this episode of TOI Sportscast, someone who is in the top spot of Visit Victoria, which is, of course, the tourism board for the state of Victoria in Australia. It's my privilege and pleasure to welcome Mr. Brendan McClements, who is the CEO of Visit Victoria, to TOI Sportscast. Brendan, good to see you again.
Fantastic to see you, and thank you very much for the chance to have a chat.
Absolutely. Now, Brendan, of course, I was in Australia recently, as you know, for about a week, and Visit Victoria were absolutely fantastic hosts. And like I said in my introduction, this is an episode where I want to talk about what goes on behind the scenes. Because, you know, when cricketing fans talk about or, you know, look forward to a tournament of the size of a World Cup, they, of course, talk about the cricketing aspect of it all. You know, in India, we're always very excited to see a match against the arch rivals, Pakistan. Same, of course, across the border. And then you have, you know, T20 cricket has evolved so much over the years. You have a team like England, you have, you know, a team like South Africa, you have a team like New Zealand who've been doing well. And, of course, Pakistan, ever erratic. You never know which Pakistan is going to turn up on the field, which side of the bed they're going to get up on. So it's always fantastic to talk about the cricket. But not always do we think about what goes on behind the scenes. And in that respect, Victoria, the way they opened their gates for tourists across the world to come into Victoria and to Melbourne in particular, not just to see the cricket, but also to experience everything else that Victoria and Melbourne have to offer. That was really, really good to see. I have to ask you this. After the World Cup got over, did you get a chance to maybe catch a cold beer, put up your feet and say, yeah, job well done?
Well, I actually have had the last 2 days off, so that's been a welcome change. But you're exactly right. It's been a sort of extraordinary journey, a tournament of this size and scale, somewhere like the MCG with 100,000 people there. You know, we have been working on this for literally years. Obviously, it was originally scheduled for 2020. Yep. And then we had the pandemic hit, so it's been pushed back a couple of years. But in the interim, we were still working on our plans. And in some ways, the opportunity that was presented to Victoria as the world was opening up, as India was opening up, to host this event was almost too good to miss. So we've been delighted with the way the tournament worked. Absolutely astounded with the way in which all teams were embraced, but particularly India and Pakistan, to see that initial game and then the final as well. It was just a brilliant exhibition of, you know, certainly on the field cricket, but we did take the opportunity to sort of send an invitation to the world. If you get the chance, come down to Melbourne, come down to Victoria and see what we've got as well. So it was a brilliant, brilliant opportunity for us to do it. We love doing it, and hopefully we get to do it again sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Now, you know, talking about Australia, Brendan, I mean, one thing which I guess people across the world know very well, and I'm not just talking about cricket fans here, I'm talking about sports fans in general, and also those who are not entirely into sports but do like to travel. They do know that Australia is a great destination to go to. It's a country that has an immense outdoorsy culture and a sporting culture, a very rich sporting history, and, you know, there's so many traditions and so many great sportsmen and women that the country has produced. You go anywhere in Australia, and I witnessed that myself in the two trips that I've been to Australia for, where anywhere you go, there are kids playing. You know, there are kids playing, there are football matches on, there's, you know, there's a cricket game on. There are so many sporting infrastructures, you know, that are in place, especially in a city like Melbourne. But tell me, when you get a World Cup and you're talking about inviting the world to come and witness your hometown and your home state, and you want to, of course, put your best foot forward, how early does the work start? I mean, how many years has the World Cup preparation been in the pipeline for you and then get you a good showing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I think the advantage, if there is one, that Melbourne has in particular is we've done these sorts of things before. So 2015, obviously, the one-day World Cup was in Melbourne and Australia had a different result in 2015. But so we, if you like, we've got an existing understanding of what it takes to put it on. But essentially, since that World Cup in 2015 finished, we were thinking about when's the next opportunity. And then the next opportunity obviously started in 2020 initially. So we pretty much moved straight into, okay, we want more of that if we can, if the ICC grants us Australia the rights and then Melbourne gets the rights in that. So it's in that context, it's probably been 7 years or so of thinking through what it looks like and to make it not just what happens on the field, as you so rightly said in your introduction, but to all the other things that we can take advantage of. And we do divide that up into, you know, we need the cricket to go very well. We want, from a visitation perspective, to show Melbourne and Victoria off. We think it's a great state, very compact, everything within your reach, with great urban experience, but also nature and wildlife just around the corner. But we also spend a fair bit of time working on, okay, as you said, the kids playing cricket, what are those legacy initiatives? How do we make sure that apart from the tournament, apart from people coming, there's the leave behind for cricket infrastructure, for cricket participation in Victoria is strong. And we think that's been a brilliant part of this World Cup. Melbourne is a fantastically multicultural community. That's one of the things that's often overlooked. We've got a couple of hundred different nationalities living here. We have 160-odd languages spoken across Melbourne. And to see some of those communities in particular showcased in a way that we haven't necessarily been able to do previously was brilliant. So the Indian community, the Pakistan community, Sri Lankan community, even our Zimbabwe expats turned up in the game against India, where it might have been 80,000 barracking for India, but there was still a few thousand there for Zimbabwe. So for us to be able to put that face forward as well as a multicultural country, we're very proud of that. So all those things are a part of the 7 years preparation.
Absolutely. You talk about how Australia knows a thing or two, of course, about hosting these big events. And that's of course, very, very true because you've been doing it for such a long time. And Melbourne in particular, a city, and Victoria as a state, they've been doing it for such a long time. You think about most of the big events that happen across Melbourne, and it's incredible how it's spread across sports. I mean, of course, you have the MCG where cricket is played, but also it's other sports are played there too. They've started using the drop-in pitch quite some time back at the MCG. You have the Australian Formula One Grand Prix that happens on Albert Park. You have the Australian Open, the year's first tennis Grand Slam that takes place at Rod Laver Arena and also Margaret Court and now John Cain Arena. But despite the fact that you know that there is a set template that can be followed and you can fall back on that rich culture and tradition that you have of hosting the world for these big events, post-COVID things must have changed because COVID changed things across the world. And of course, we saw Australia also locking down and in many instances, rightly so, to ensure that, you know, the pandemic does not spread. Mm. How difficult was the challenge to open up the gates again to the world post-COVID?
Well, there was a lot of thought that went into it. And by the time we got to October, November for the Cricket World Cup, we'd been well practiced at doing it. And in some ways, I remember when the tournament was initially delayed in 2020, we were pushing for a 2021 rescheduling. And as it turned out, that was probably the right decision not to do that, to push it to 2022. We managed to wash through those steps that we needed to take in this country to make ourselves more safe, you know, three times vaccinations, a better understanding of the disease, a better understanding of the communication. So by the time we got to the Cricket World Cup, we'd given ourselves enough of a runway to make it as seamless as we can. So sure, there was
some additional things that are put in place, some hygiene factors, some cleanliness. People are more aware of that. But most importantly, you know, most of the population's vaccinated over here. And that time got us to that point where the vaccination regime had worked well. So we could be really confident about now let's just take advantage of the moment. Because of the reasons you've put forward there, in part, the message to the world was actually things are in great shape down here in Victoria, great shape in Melbourne, and we really wanted to show that off.
Absolutely. No, I have to say that it was a seamless experience for fans, for the media that travelled for the World Cup this time, especially at a venue like Melbourne, where, of course, the MCG is. And talking about the MCG, it hosted an India-Pakistan game at the World Cup, narrowly came close to hosting a second one as well, but India could make the final there. But what was the experience like of having an India-Pakistan match at the MCG? Full house?
Full house. No, and keep in mind, you lose a few seats in cricket mode at the MCG, notionally 100,000, but it's probably closer to 92,000. So 92 and a bit, I think, for the India-Pakistan game. That's had an incredible impact here in Australia and in Melbourne. And I was lucky enough, I actually worked in cricket for a while, worked with the ICC also. So I had seen up close and personal the sort of extraordinary event that India-Pakistan games are. Yeah. So I had a sort of an inkling of what was coming. But again, I mean, even today I was in the street talking to someone I know and they just were completely awestruck by the experience and the passion that came from fans of all sides. Yes, there was a very strong and parochial Indian crowd, but there was also a very strong representation from the Pakistan crowd.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant to see. I've lost count of the number of people who've told me that's been amongst their greatest ever experiences. You know, not just sporting experiences, but experiences, whether they be cultural, going to a show, seeing an exhibition, just to witness something like that was amazing. And I'm certainly in that camp. It was an extraordinary, brilliant night and really set up the tournament.
Absolutely. It was also fantastic, you know, picking up from where you left off, it was really great to see the number of Pakistani fans who were there for the final.
Yes.
You know, the attendance, I think, at the MCG for that was 82,000 plus. Yes. And, you know, by my estimation, I don't think there were more than 80 English fans there. The rest of them would have been all Pakistani.
There really was a tournament where the teams from your part of the world showed off because the Sri Lankan fans got in behind their teams. They had to come through qualifying and they were down at Geelong and they've got a particular culture that supports their event as well. So I think there was a few people down in Geelong who hadn't seen the sort of musical accompaniment that goes with the Sri Lankan cricket band. It was a brilliant. It was like that's one of the great things about World Cups of any persuasion, and the way different communities come together and showcase what goes on. So our World Cup, the Cricket World Cup, just certainly delivered that.
And overall, Brendan, if you've gone over the numbers of the people who travelled to Australia for the T20 World Cup, and especially to Victoria and Melbourne, were Indian tourists right up there as number one?
Yeah, we're still waiting for the final numbers to come through, but yes, the India tourists will be the number one tourist from overseas. We think there was somewhere between the two games in particular, probably 40 to 50,000 people from outside Melbourne who came to support the Indian support teams. Now, some of those will have been from New Zealand or from Singapore, Malaysia, other parts of other parts of Australia possibly, but you know, there would have been tens of thousands of fans that travelled from India, a very passionate, parochial fan base that loves seeing their team play. I hadn't been lucky enough to see a couple of the Indian players play until this time around, and to see Virat in that first game was something special. You know, that I think we've talked about it, that first six, the second last ball, the second last over was
a catastrophe.
Unbelievable. I couldn't. The drive back over the head of the Harris Ralph, I think it was the bowler, and it just went. You were stunned by that. And then Zimbabwe's innings to see Yadav, I think he sort of took one from outside off stump across his left ear for six down over fine leg. It was, okay, well, that's now the best shots. I've seen the two best shots I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen quite a lot of cricket in the course of that tournament, and they were both by Indian players. It was amazing to see.
It's interesting that you talk about the cricket on display, Brendan, because, you know, when you host a tournament of a scale of the World Cup, the sporting activity that's on offer on the field, that plays such a big role, because at the end of the day, the fans will spend a lot of money to travel to a country. They will buy the tickets to watch the games. But then if they're not treated to quality cricket or football or tennis, they can leave feeling a little bit disappointed. Of course, that's no one's fault, because you can't obviously dictate how a game of cricket or football is going to pan out on the field. But if you have a great game, then of course everyone across the board feels so much better about themselves as well. And in that context, we were talking to David Hussey right outside the MCG when we were in Australia. And he was also talking about how open this particular edition of the T20 World Cup was. This was, of course, well before the final, so we didn't know who's going to be playing the final. It was before the semis. But he was talking about how open it's been, and you can't really say this team is the favorite, or, you know, this team is sure-shot title favorites. It was an open tournament, and it did produce some very good cricketers.
It did, and I think that format of the game allows some of the teams who in a longer format might be more challenged to be very, very competitive. And you look at the teams that won games during the tournament. You know, you saw Ireland win games, you saw the Netherlands win a critical game for Pakistan, Zimbabwe winning games. It was a brilliant sort of tournament to see the cricket being played at that level across a greater range of nations. So I think that was one of the strong outcomes. And just to pick up your point there about, the importance of great cricket being played for fans to enjoy it, I've learned that over a period of time, that if you can create the environment in which elite athletes can perform, you can almost rely on the athletes to do amazing things. So provided you give them the best possible stage, then let them go to work. And that's when you see someone like Virat Kohli or, you know, any of the great players around the world. If you give them that moment, they do the rest. So you don't have to worry about too much. All you've got to concentrate on is giving them the opportunity to perform. Yep. And then inevitably they perform. And again, I read some commentary from Virat after that knock in that first game, and to hear him sort of deconstruct how he went about it, what his thought process was, it was just nothing but admiration for someone to be able to think that way and be so in the game, so understanding what needed to be done. And then, as we know, he did it. So it's just amazing. So I think it's such an important piece that the role of people like Visit Victoria or ICC or Cricket Australia is just to create a stage on which the athletes can perform and then leave it to the athletes, because they are inevitably ready to go, and the cream rises to the top in that instance.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because again, if you look back at this edition of the T20 World Cup, we had pretty much everything there. I mean, you had some incredible upsets, you know, that certain quote-unquote minnow teams pulled off. Yes. And we had a team like Pakistan who were pretty much down in the dumps at one stage.
Yes.
No one really expected them to go all the way up to the final, but they did, thanks, of course, partly to the Dutch. And then you had, a team like India who pulled off a great win against Pakistan, but then faltered at the semi-final stage. And the way they faltered again must have surprised a lot of people, including yourself. A 10-wicket loss to the English, that I guess not too many people saw coming. In terms of, you know, if you put on your organizer's hat and, you know, you are hoping for, of course, a great show at the MCG, because that's where it all ends, right? That's where it all culminates, the T20 World Cup. And you are hoping for a blockbuster final, and you don't get anything bigger than an India-Pakistan game, especially, like you yourself said, in the shortest format in T20 cricket. When it wasn't India-Pakistan, was there a sense of, so close and yet so far in terms of having that perfect end?
It's a really interesting question. I think a couple of people have said to me, and I know who'll be listening, so I don't want to be taken the wrong way, but they were pleased in some way that it didn't end up being India-Pakistan again, because that first game was so extraordinary. And I think that was probably the greatest game of T20 cricket ever played. And I think it was almost inarguably the most watched game of cricket ever played. You know, when you think about the number of Indian supporters in the world, the connectedness that exists this year that didn't exist 5 years ago, the broadcast reach, the digital reach. I've got no doubt, no game in cricket's history has been watched live more than that first game of that game, of that tournament. In fact, I had a friend who was travelling through Rajasthan, a friend of mine from school, and he was, I didn't know, but he sent me a text. He said, I'm in a little town in Rajasthan and it's absolutely going berserk. It's just, the crowd is going off the tree. It's just an amazing experience. So for probably, and selfishly for me, Australia in the final would have been nice as well. And, yeah, look, at the end of the day, you can only control what you control. Yep. There were a few of us that would love, out of the four, that perhaps India-Pakistan would have been the most preferred, but we were delighted to have two informed teams who did an amazing job to see 82,000 people come to that game and witness, again, a bit of cricket history as England became only, I think, you're right, the only the second team to win two. So it sets it up for the next edition, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And being there at the MCG, Brendan, for the final, I mean, the atmosphere was absolutely electric. Hours before the final began. Of course, it was a sea of green, like I said, outside the MCG, inside the MCG, but it was, that atmosphere was just so electric. It was incredible to see. And Pakistan also made a match of it. There was a time when it looked like they just didn't have enough on the board.
Yes.
But, you know, they came out all guns blazing with the ball. And of course, we know how good their bowlers are and they made a match of it. But when you are hosting a tournament like the T20 World Cup, and when you are at the center of it all, in the heart of it all, being a state like Victoria, having an infrastructure like the MCG in Melbourne, when you are hosting the world for something like this, you are not just opening your gates up to people for the cricket, you're also opening your gates up and your doors for people to come and experience everything that Victoria and Melbourne has to offer. And I spoke about the outdoorsy culture, of course, that exists all across Australia. But if you look at everything else, there's so much to do. I mean, there's the food, which is absolutely fantastic. There's the wildlife. There's the scenic beauty. You have the beaches. And like you yourself mentioned, everything is so well connected. And again, this is my second trip to Australia, but I experienced it a lot more this time because I had a bit more time to explore the city and also to explore parts of Victoria around Melbourne. And it's incredible how you can get into a car, drive 40 minutes, and you are someplace very different out of the city, which has so much to it.
Yeah, look, we're really proud of that part of the Melbourne and Victoria experience. So we're the smallest of the mainland states in Australia by geography. That's a huge advantage because you can get a lot crammed into that space. And we do have all the Australian iconic moments, yes, beaches, kangaroos, koalas, porcupines, platypi, penguins, you know, we've got all those classic Australian things. But we do have also in Melbourne a really, really vibrant urban experience that's got food, wine, culture, art, music, you know, all sorts of scenes. The longer you spend there, we find the more people immerse themselves in, you know, what they're interested in. So that multicultural culturalism comes through in Melbourne as well. So it gives you a range of things to do. It's a, you know, that's why it makes this sort of job is actually something I really quite enjoy because we can talk to people about a place we're very proud of in Victoria. And one of the things we do know, the MCG, some interesting statistics I saw the other day about the MCG is sort of an icon. Many parts of the world associate Australia with the Sydney Opera House or the Great Barrier Reef or a kangaroo. The only part of the world that has a slightly different top three is India. And in India, the MCG is iconic and associated closely with Australia. So it's an advantage for us in India to have that incredible facility that, you know, people's memories are made in there. A lot of Indians will have been in that way, in that first game.
Absolutely. And it's also, if you're an Indian fan or an Indian tourist, it's great to go inside the MCG. And if you are lucky enough to be given a tour inside MCG, you get to see Ranjit Singh Ji's name on the Honorary Life Members Board. That's really fantastic. And again, in terms of hosting a tournament of this scale and welcoming tourists, you want to package it all into sort of a family affair. You want to tell people and, you know, put out the messaging that, look, if you come to Australia, you come to Melbourne, you come to Victoria, there's something to do for everyone. Right?
Correct. And that's absolutely the case. So one of the great things about the Indian crowds that came and the Pakistani crowds was they are very family-friendly crowds. So we saw prams and pushers and kids asleep on their parents' arms. It was brilliant to watch. But that's part of the Melbourne experience as well. So if you want to sort of go to a small hidden bar and have a drink with friends, that's fine. If you want to go to the zoo and see the koalas and the kangaroos with family, that's fine. We cater for all those different tastes. We're a substantial city of about 5 million people, so there's plenty of to do. And increasingly that's the market that's coming in to see. So I'll come with my mum, I'll come with my dad, I'll come with my kids, and we see families all the way around, from all cultures, enjoying that Melbourne in that way.
Absolutely. And sports becomes that perfect diving board to use.
Yes.
You know, when you are inviting the world or when you wanted to showcase what a state like Victoria or a city like Melbourne has to offer, sports becomes that perfect diving board, again, because you have so many sports to offer. And I guess we saw that in this world.
Yeah, and particularly with India, we've got a very strong Indian student population here who come to Australia, come to Melbourne to further their education. Mm. And it's a really strong part. So we've got a great person-to-person connection. A lot of family and relatives come out. We see that around the state to support their kids while they're working their way through college here. It's been a really pleasing part to be able to, again, around something like the Cricket World Cup, provide that incentive for people to come out and spend some time with their families again.
Absolutely. And, you know, just a walk around sort of, if I could call it, the sporting district of Melbourne, where you have the MCG, a stone's throw away is, of course, Rod Laver Arena. Then you have, the John Cain Arena and Margaret Court. And it's incredible to see how a tennis facility can be turned into a cycling velodrome.
Yes.
And it's incredible to see that this was used, of course, and it's not just for sort of local level tournaments or domestic tournaments. It was used for the Gold Coast Games, the Commonwealth Games. So it's at the highest level. And then you have World Cup level infrastructure. You have Grand Slam level infrastructure. It seems like Australia has almost perfected the art of seamlessly putting together sporting infrastructure, which caters to so many different sports across the board.
Yeah, well, in the days I used to play tennis, I'd occasionally hire a court at the tennis centre, and one of the highlights would be you'd end up playing on Margaret Court Arena, right? So, just Thursday night with social with friends, and they say, "Oh, yeah, Margaret Court Arena." If you know, you walk out there, hey, this is a bit of fun. So, we are trying to find a way to make sure that as those facilities are built, everyone gets an opportunity to participate in some way. You know, back to the 2006 Commonwealth Games, that my local sports club, the Melbourne Sports and Aquatic Centre, that was a facility in which world records were broken, basketball was played, swimmers were there, diving was there. But these days, me and my mates can go along and shoot a few hoops if we want to. So we do try from the start to design things to have a shelf life extending beyond a particular period of time. Mm. And the precinct you've talked about, we had the Rugby World Cup, which is due to be played in 2027. I think that's the next iteration. They're looking, Australia's been awarded the rights and they're trying to determine who'd host what parts of that tournament. And we took the leadership from Ireland around the area you're talking about with the MCG and Rod Laver Arena, John Cain Arena, where the tennis is played. And it's you can forget how impressive it is, I must say, just walking around. And I did say to World Rugby, you know, what you're looking at is 40, 50 years of vision and probably $10 or $20 billion of investment by the time you add it all up. So the state's been at it for a long time. The state's consistently invested in it. And, you know, those of us who are lucky enough to live here these days benefit from that because it is an amazing set of facilities within a kilometre of the city. You know, most people who work there walk there on a game day, unless the weather forecast is predicting rain, 95% chance. And then you walk there anyway because you know it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right. Well, like I said, one of the lessons I learned is always carry an umbrella with you, whether there is forecast or not. Brendan, I know you have a packed schedule and a packed calendar, and but I just wanted to scratch the surface of this thing that we're talking about just a little bit more in terms of the sporting infrastructure that's in place. One other absolutely incredible facet, of course, Australia is not the only country that does it. There are other countries in the world that also do it, but not too many countries have managed to perfect the art of turning their sporting stadiums into venues for other cultural events. And this time when we were at the Rod Laver Arena, and even we were given this fantastic tour inside Rod Laver Arena, we found out that it was being turned and being made ready for a concert. And we walked in, and I've been to the Rod Laver Arena in the past, and I've seen a Grand Slam match, in fact, in 2013. Yeah, it was Djokovic versus Murray. Djokovic absolutely hammered Murray in that match. But this time when I walked in, I couldn't see the court. Because it was covered with the boards, and because they were getting it ready for a concert.
Yes.
And another interesting thing that we found out was pop sensation Pink, for instance, had 18 sold out shows.
Yeah.
18 in a row in at the Rod Laver Arena. So much so that they have renamed gate number 18 as the Pink Gate. You're walking from gate number 1, 2, 3, 4, they're all blue gates, and suddenly you come across a Pink Gate with Pink's, of course, photo there and the dates of all her shows, her sold out shows there. But it's incredible how Australia can manage to do that. And I'll tell you why I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this, because there are countries across the world that put in a lot of money into building sporting infrastructure for some of the biggest tournaments, like the Olympics, for instance. But we have seen in the past how heartbreakingly a lot of this infrastructure is, it just goes down the drain. There are stadiums that, where pieces are falling off, it's really almost breaking down, literally. There is no management there is no upkeep there. And yet you have, a system in place where when there is no tennis happening or no cricket happening, you can turn it into something.
I couldn't agree more. It's heartbreaking when you look back at some of the Olympic hosts and you see some of the field facilities that have fallen into disrepair. It's just that you do sit there and shake your head. But from our perspective, we've always tried to make sure that whatever we design, there's something there afterwards for use. So, you're right. Rod Laver Arena, which is the home of the Grand Slam, the centre court, that was the third busiest concert venue in the world, I think, in 2000, just before the pandemic, 2019. I mean, it hosted the World Swimming Championships in 2007. We put a swimming pool inside there just to take advantage of it. So for whatever reason, because we've been able to generate enough demand in other areas, because we've been able to be disciplined enough to concentrate on a smaller number of high-quality venues, the state finds itself in a lucky position of being able to have a suite of venues that can be used at the elite level. And in fact, in December next month, the World Short Course Swimming Championships will be back again. They'll be back at the swimming pool where this week my friends will be swimming laps up and down. But next week we'll have the best in the world swimming in there as well. So we do try and find a way to make sure that beyond the 2-3 weeks of an event, there's something there that lasts. Occasionally, it can be more challenging as we work with rights holders who might want certain things at there. But generally, we found a landing place that allows us to get a benefit and great events to take place all the time.
Absolutely. And now that the world is, has finally entered the post-pandemic phase, if I can call it that, and things are coming slowly returning back to normal. It's essential that everyone puts in their best efforts to make sure that, we can go back as quickly as we can to the way things were and even make it better in many ways. And in that context, I guess the state of Victoria and Melbourne did a great job in hosting so many matches for the T20 World Cup. Visit Victoria played a huge, huge role in that as well. I would like to thank you once again, Brendan, for joining me here on DOI Sportscast. It was a really nice chat, an illuminating chat in so many ways. And I'm sure our listeners have also enjoyed it, and they will continue to enjoy it as they listen more to this. Thank you so much. And Any other message that you would like to send out to the Indian fans who would love to visit Australia?
Come down and visit us whenever you want to. We'd love to see you. I really appreciate the chance to spend some time. I'll be back in India early next year, so might catch up again. But it's a, you know, I've spent a lot of time in India over my life. It's a wonderful part of the world. So it's great to see the two nations getting closer together.
Absolutely. It's a great relationship that Australia and India share on the cricket field, off the cricket field, and in so many other fields as well. When you're here in India, we would love to host you as well, Brendan. And thank you so much for joining us here on TY Sportscast. Thank you.